Chapter 23. Books. But you have not been behind the scenes. Wait till you have to sit at a table for a half a day with a pen in your hand. He can walk up and down his rooms for hours and hours. I used to get so stiff and numb that I was afraid I would lose my balance and fall off the chair all at once. She kept her hands folded in front of her, and her eyes, fixed on Miss Alden's face, betrayed no animation whatever. Miss Alden, gathering that the lady who called herself a dame de compagnie was proud of having acted as secretary to Peter Ivanovich, made an amiable remark. You could not imagine a more trying experience, declared the lady. Here is an Anglo-American journalist interviewing Madame de S. now, or I would take you up, she continued in a changed tone and glancing towards the staircase. Act as master of ceremonies. It appeared that Madame de S. could not bear Swiss servants about her person, and, indeed, servants would not stay for very long in the Chateau Borel. There were always difficulties. Miss Alden had already noticed that the hall was like a moldy barn of marble and stucco with cobwebs in the corners and faint tracks of mud on the black and white tessellated floor. I look also after this animal, continued the dame de compagnie, keeping her hands folded quietly in front of her, and she bent her worn gaze upon the cat. Don't mind a bit. Animals have their rights. Though, strictly speaking, I see no reason why they should not suffer as well as human beings. Do you? But of course they never suffer so much. That is impossible. Only, in their case it is more pitiful, because they cannot make a revolution. I used to be a Republican. I suppose you are a Republican? Miss Alden confessed to me that she did not know what to say. But she nodded slightly, and asked in her turn, and are you no longer a Republican? After taking down Peter Ivanovich from dictation for 2 years, it is difficult for me to be anything. First of all, you have to sit perfectly motionless. The slightest movement you make puts to flight the ideas of Peter Ivanovich. You hardly dare to breathe. And as to coughing, God forbid. Peter Ivanovich changed the position of the table to the wall, because at first I could not help raising my eyes to look out of the window while waiting for him to go on with his dictation. That was not allowed. He said I stared so stupidly. I was likewise not permitted to look at him over my shoulder. Instantly Peter Ivanovich stamped his foot and would roar, "Look down on the paper!" It seems my expression, my face, put him off. Well, I know that I am not beautiful, and that my expression is not hopeful either. He said that my air of unintelligent expectation irritated him. These are his own words. Miss Alden was shocked, but admitted to me that she was not altogether surprised. Is it possible that Peter Ivanovich could treat any woman so rudely? She cried. The dame de compagnie nodded several times with an air of discretion, then assured Miss Alden that she did not mind in the least. The trying part of it was to have the secret of the composition laid bare before her, to see the great author of the revolutionary gospels grope for words, as if he were in the dark, as to what he meant to say. I am quite willing to be the blind instrument of higher ends. To give one's life for the cause is nothing. But to have one's illusions destroyed, that is really almost more than one can bear. I really don't exaggerate, she insisted. Tea seemed to freeze my very beliefs in me the more, so that when we worked in winter Peter Ivanovich, walking up and down the room, required no artificial heat to keep himself warm. Even when we moved to the south of France there are bitterly cold days, especially when you have to sit still for 6 hours at a stretch. The walls of these villas on the Riviera are so flimsy. Peter Ivanovich did not seem to be aware of anything. It is true that I kept down my shivers from fear of putting him out. I used to set my teeth till my jaws felt absolutely locked. and the moments when Peter Ivanovich interrupted his dictation, and sometimes these intervals were very long, often 20 minutes, no less. While he walked to and fro behind my back muttering to himself, I felt I was dying by inches, I assure you. Perhaps if I had let my teeth rattle, Peter Ivanovich might have noticed my distress, but I don't think it would have had any practical effect. She's very miserly in such matters. The Dame de Compagnie glanced up the staircase. The big cat had finished the milk, and was rubbing its whiskered cheek sinuously against her skirt. She dived to snatch it up from the floor. Miserliness is rather a quality than otherwise, you know, she continued, holding the cat in her folded arms. Ithus it is misers who can spare money for worthy objects, not the so-called generous natures. But pray don't think I am a sybarite. My father was a clerk in the Ministry of Finances with no position at all. You may guess by this that our home was far from luxurious, though of course we did not actually suffer from cold. I ran away from my parents, you know, directly I began to think by myself. It is not very easy such thinking. One has got to be put in the way of it, awakened to the truth. I amended it for my salvation to an old apple woman, who had her stall under the gateway of the house we lived in. She had a kind wrinkled face, and the most friendly voice imaginable. One day, casually, we began to talk about a child, a ragged little girl we had seen begging from men in the streets at dusk. And from one thing to another my eyes began to open gradually to the horrors from which innocent people are made to suffer in this world, only in order that governments might exist. After I once understood the crime of the upper classes, I could not go on living with my parents. Not a single charitable word was to be heard in our home from year's end to year's end. There was nothing but the talk of vile office intrigues, and of promotion and of salaries, and of courting the favor of the chiefs. The mere idea of marrying one day such another man as my father made me shudder. I don't mean that there was anyone wanting to marry me. There was not the slightest prospect of anything of the kind. But was it not sin enough to live on a government salary while half Russia was dying of hunger? The Ministry of Finances. What a grotesque horror it is. What does the starving, ignorant people want with a Ministry of Finances? I kissed my old folks on both cheeks, and went away from them to live in cellars, with the proletariat. I tried to make myself useful to the utterly hopeless. I suppose you understand what I mean? I mean the people who have nowhere to go, and nothing to look forward to in this life. Do you understand how frightful that is, nothing to look forward to? Sometimes I think that it is only in Russia that there are such people and such a depth of misery can be reached. Well, I plunged into it, and do you know there isn't much that one can do in there? No, indeed, at least, as long as there are ministries of finances and such like grotesque horrors to stand in the way. I suppose I would have gone mad there just trying to fight the vermin, if it had not been for a man. It was my old friend and teacher, the poor saintly apple woman, who discovered him for me, quite accidentally. She came to fetch me late one evening in her quiet way. I followed her where she would lead. That part of my life was in her hands altogether, and without her my spirit would have perished miserably. The man was a young workman, a lithographer by trade, and he had got into trouble in connection with that affair of temperance tracts, you remember. There was a lot of people put in prison for that. The Ministry of Finances again. What would become of it if the poor folk ceased making beasts of themselves with drink? Upon my word, I would think that finances and all the rest of it are an invention of the devil. Only that a belief in a supernatural source of evil is not necessary. Men alone are quite capable of every wickedness. Finances indeed. Hatred and contempt hissed in her utterance of the word finances, but at the very moment she gently stroked the cat reposing in her arms. She even raised them slightly, and inclining her head rubbed her cheek against the fur of the animal, which received this caress with the complete detachment so characteristic of its kind. Then looking at Miss Alden, she excused herself once more for not taking her upstairs to Madame, as the interview could not be interrupted. Presently the journalist would be seen coming down the stairs. The best thing was to remain in the hall, and besides, all these rooms, she glanced all around at the many doors, all these rooms on the ground floor were unfurnished. Positively there is no chair down here to offer you, she continued. But if you prefer your own thoughts to my chatter, I will sit down on the bottom step here and keep silent. Miss Alden hastened to assure her that, on the contrary, she was very much interested in the story of the journeyman lithographer. He was a revolutionist, of course. A martyr, a simple man, said the Dame de Compagnie, with a faint sigh, and gazing through the open front door dreamily. She turned her misty brown eyes on Miss Alden. I lived with him for 4 months. It was like a nightmare. As Miss Alden looked at her inquisitively, she began to describe the emaciated face of the man, his fleshless limbs, his destitution. The room into which the apple woman had led her was a tiny garret, a miserable den under the roof of a sordid house. The plaster fallen off the walls covered the floor, and when the door was opened a horrible tapestry of black cobwebs waved in the draft. He had been liberated a few days before, flung out of prison into the streets. And Miss Alden seemed to see for the first time a name and a face upon the body of that suffering people whose hard fate had been the subject of so many conversations between her and her brother in the garden of their country house. He had been arrested with scores and scores of other people in that affair of the lithograph temperance tracts. Unluckily, having got hold of a great many suspected persons, the police thought they could extract from some of them other information relating to the revolutionist propaganda. They beat him so cruelly in the course of investigation, went on the Dame de Compagnie, that they injured him internally. When they had done with him, he was doomed. He could do nothing for himself. I beheld him lying on the wooden bedstead without any bedding, with his head on a bundle of dirty rags, lent to him out of charity by an old rag picker, who happened to live in the basement of the house. There he was, uncovered, burning with fever, and there was not even a jug in the room for the water to quench his thirst with. There was nothing whatever, just that bedstead and the bare floor. Was there no one in all that great town amongst the liberals and revolutionaries to extend a helping hand to a brother? Asked Miss Alden indignantly. Yes. But you do not know the most terrible part of that man's misery. Listen. It seems that they ill-used him so atrociously that, at last, his firmness gave way, and he did let out some information. Poor soul, the flesh is weak, you know. What it was he did not tell me. There was a crushed spirit in that mangled body. Nothing I found to say could make him whole. When they let him out, he crept into that hole and bore his remorse stoically. He would not go near anyone he knew. I would have sought assistance for him, but, indeed, where could I have gone looking for it? Where was I to look for anyone who had anything to spare or any power to help? The people living round us were all starving and drunken. They were the victims of the Ministry of Finances. Don't ask me how we lived. I couldn't tell you. It was like a miracle of wretchedness. I had nothing to sell, and I assure you my clothes were in such a state that it was impossible for me to go out in the daytime. I was indecent. I had to wait till it was dark before I ventured into the streets to beg for a crust of bread or whatever I could. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.